Welcome back to Success Made to Last. I'm Rick Tokini. This is our Author's Corner, presented by Gwen Sound. In today's congested marketplace, your brand can sound distinctively unique through the sonic brand gurus at Gwen Sound. Contact Gwen at info@gwynesound.com today and make your brand more memorable to the ears. Our special guest today is Dr. Nick Nicholas. He's a classically trained physicist and now a gifted novelist who has penned the book Pericles and Me. Nick, welcome to Success Made to Last.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Nice to have you on, sir. Before we get into our questions, tell us about your own backstory and how that influenced the writing of Pericles and Me.
Well, I'm going to start way back. My parents were Greek immigrants, and that's important because I grew up in an ethnic neighborhood. Irish, Italian, Polish, you name it, it was there. I went to Pittsburgh public schools in an era where the teaching was just superior. Got my bachelor's degree at Carnegie Mellon University, which was then called Carnegie Tech, a master's degree at Drexel in Philadelphia, and a PhD degree at the Catholic University in Washington. I've spent most of my career working on defense projects, but in an unusual way. I did a lot of work in the field, rode submarines, aircraft, surface ships, at times bivouacked in the field with soldiers, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. If I had to do it over again, I don't think I would change much. I've worked all over Europe. I was amongst the first Americans to enter Ukraine after the Soviet Union broke up. And I've spent a good deal of time in the Middle East, and I've seen a lot. The book Pericles and Me is derived from my personal experiences. Much of what you would read in the book is true. In fact, I challenged the reader in the preface to separate the real from the fanciful. There are 30-some characters in the book. I knew all of them. Only a few were made up in order to keep the plot moving along. I use a device of Pericles, who speaks with the lead character named Alex, as a means of discussing things. Pericles appears to Alex in his dreams, and they have discussions, and they find that human nature has not changed, but our weapons have, and that makes a big difference, as Pericles is quick to grasp, being a superior statesman himself. The plot is international in nature. It involves a great many interests, U.S., Ukrainian, German, Middle Eastern, and I've been to all these places that I talk about in the book and have a feeling for them. The book was very easy for me to write because I was writing about things I knew and in part experienced. I wrote it in 3 months. It's 400 pages in 3 months. That's pretty fast, they tell me. I've started writing a couple of other books because I discovered that I really enjoyed writing this book. It was heartfelt, and I put it as a fiction because I didn't want to get any blowback and yet tell a story that basically says we could have done better in denuclearizing other countries than we did. But human nature being what it is, competing human interests being what they are, we often made mistakes. I think in the main, the hearts of the American diplomats and people who were involved were in the right place. They just failed to grasp some circumstances initially everyone thought the Russians would tell the Ukrainians what to do, even though the Ukrainians have been thirsting for their independence for at least 200 years, maybe longer. And so that led us into making some mistakes. Met a lot of people in Ukraine, from the president on down. The minister of defense was an unusual man who could have become dictator, I believe, if he had snapped his fingers, but he didn't want to be. He wanted a democracy for his country. And it's become a very complex situation, as we've seen in the news. Anyhow, I enjoyed writing it, and I do hope people enjoy reading it as much as I enjoyed writing it.
I'm sure that they will. Hey, when did you get the idea to have Pericles as the center of the book, as seen through the dreams or in the dreams of Alex, or whispering in the main character's ear?
I can't rightly say. It's just one of those things that just appeared to me. I don't think there's a logical progression for it, but I knew a fair amount about the real man Pericles, that he was one of the more remarkable individuals in history. Yet he made grave mistakes. He made the mistake of allowing his city to slide into a disastrous war with Sparta. And I'm sure he had regrets about it. And unfortunately, he died of the plague before he had a chance to correct anything. And lesser politicians took over the affairs of Athens and really drove Athens into the ground and suffered a disastrous defeat, even though they had all the advantages and should have defeated the Spartans. And I do hope this never happens to our country. But there are so many parallels between Athens and the United States. And they discuss some of these. For example, Athens depended heavily on the north coast, north shore of the Black Sea for grain to feed its citizenry. And so the people, the chieftains who ran those little principalities were becoming restive. So Pericles sent a powerful Athenian fleet to pay friendship visits. And they did. They're very friendly. They provided gifts to the chieftains and showed everybody what a fleet Athens had. And it calmed everything down. Well, Theodore Roosevelt did the same thing. When the United States became a world power, especially an economic power, people in the Pacific areas of our interest were becoming restive. Governments were becoming restive. And he sent the Great White Fleet on a friendship visit, and that calmed things down, at least for a time. So there are lots of parallels between Athens and the United States. There is one big difference between Athenian democracy and U.S. democracy, and that is that the Athenians did not have a Bill of Rights, whereas we do. The government cannot arbitrarily take away our wealth, our property, or jail us, whereas in Athens, you could arbitrarily chase people out of the city. You could have them exiled, ostracized, as it were. The word ostracized comes from the Greek word oston, which means a seashell. So you wrote somebody's name you wanted to have ostracized, and you put it in a basket, and if enough people did so, he was ostracized. And that was something that was used by politicians. And now today, I see this cancel culture rising. There's a parallel there, isn't there? You don't get them off of our territory, but you get them off the internet, you get them out of the newspapers, and they're effectively erased politically. That's very dangerous.
Yeah, it is a modern version of being ostracized.
That's right. So the mechanism of Pericles gives them an opportunity to discuss these things. And then Pericles exercises political skills to supplement Alex's scientific skills. And so that's an interesting interaction. There's a lot of jocular back and forth between the two of them on that score. They make fun of each other's specialized skills, as really occurs in real life, too. I mean, I've been in situations where I've heard politicians, worry about scientists who are experts in what they do, but are in the lights of the politicians, naive about politics. That happened in the handling of nuclear weapons, for instance. I mean, some scientists were able to transcend the gap between politics and science, and some politicians were able to grasp enough science to formulate the proper positions on the use and the development of nuclear weapons. So that gap still exists, and it's the more exceptional people that can straddle it and work effectively.
That's right.
When the Soviet Union broke up, Ukraine stood as the third largest nuclear power in the world after the United States and Russia. Ukraine had some 54, or was it 58, don't remember exactly, silos with ICBMs in them. They didn't want them. They did not see the United States as an enemy. Their concern was with the Russians. They were afraid that the Russians were going to try to take them over, which they surely tried and are still trying to do. So Senators Nunn and Lugar sponsored a bill that put up $400 million to finance the taking down of these nuclear weapons. And, of course, everybody and his uncle competed for that money. The U.S. National Laboratories wanted it. Lots of defense contractors wanted it. Foreigners wanted to get their hands on it, you know, like the Russians and the Ukrainians and others just tried to get the money for their own purposes. So it was a real contest, and you know, I was in it up to my ankles. I had no influence over this matter, but I watched it almost firsthand, and it's not an encouraging picture, but it is just a reflection of human nature. The Ukrainians that I knew, and I met everybody from the president on down, they misunderstood a lot of what took place. In the Soviet system, if you needed something to pursue a policy, you just took it, and you left an IOU. If you needed steel to make tanks, you got the steel, and you left an IOU. There was no money circulating, and that was one of the great weaknesses of the Soviet system. In our system, there was a ferocious competition for funding, and they confused the two. They did not understand this at first. I think they do now, but they didn't at the time. And so what I went there to offer them was help in transcending that difference. I realized that, at least I thought I realized that this was the case, that they needed to reconcile what they needed done with the U.S. system. You can't just take the money. You have to write proposals, and you have to persuade people, and you have to conduct the campaign and write position papers. And so that's where my partner and I went to help them. My partner, Dave, in the book was a real person. He and I are still good friends. And going to Ukraine was actually his idea. He came to me and he said, everybody's going to Russia. Everyone's ignoring Ukraine. Let's you and I go there. So we just made a cold call to the Ukrainian ambassador to the UN, who was the highest ranking diplomat in the U.S. at the time. They didn't have a foreign minister yet. And we begged and pleaded, and we finally got a 15-minute meeting, and we hopped a train in Washington and went to New York, and the 15 minutes grew into 2.5 or 3 hours. Dave and the ambassador got on famously, and at the end, he brought out a bottle of Napoleon brandy, and we three of us got pretty loaded drinking that bottle of brandy. And Dave, who is perhaps the greatest wit I ever met, winked at the ambassador, and he said, perhaps Napoleon left a few cases of this behind during his retreat in 1812. The ambassador and Dave just got along famously, and the result was that the foreign ministry invited us to go meet with them. And we had some extraordinary meetings. I mean, they told me things that they really shouldn't have, and I warned them. I said, look, I'm an American with a high security clearance. It's my duty to report anything of military interest to my country. And they said, okay, go ahead. And after a while, they were using us to tell the U.S. government things they didn't want to tell them directly. And I put a stop to it because it was getting out of hand. For example, they informed me that the Soviets had no computerized system to track nuclear materials. I brought the news back of that, and an Air Force colonel called me a liar in public, and we had a few words about that because I sometimes become a little hot-headed. I told him that 100 years ago to challenge you to a duel, but right now I'd like to just punch you in the nose. And the chairwoman of the meeting said, no, there's no need for that. And then she tried to get the colonel to apologize, but he wouldn't. And that's a whole story in itself, what that colonel's motives were. But it turned out to be true. They were using pencil paper, and you can see the evil. And the ability, to game the system, And that was an element that went into the plot of the book, maybe the central element.
Nick, we don't want to give away the entire book. So where can our listeners purchase Pericles and Me today?
Barnes & Noble. I almost said Baskin & Robbins, but that wouldn't have been right. Barnes & Noble and any of the books, any of the major booksellers will have it. But Amazon's and Barnes & Noble are about the easiest way to do it. We are working on an audio version as we speak. I have an actor.
Excellent.
Preferring the audio version. He happens to be my cousin, but he's a rather good actor, and recording books is part of his professional life, so it seemed like a natural thing to do. He never studied a lot of science. He's a tremendous linguist, speaks about every language you can think of, and he likes the book, so that encouraged me.
Well, we like the book, too. Want to make sure and get this final question in before the end of this show. And it's about this. What was the solution to your main character, Alex, and his balance issue between his personal life and his conscience?
That's a hard one, because his conscience vacillated. On the one hand, he considered himself and he tried to be an honorable man. On the other hand, he did not shrink from cheating people he considered to be bad people. In fact, Pericles warns him about that, not to have his personal morality become too malleable. But it was, because he was a human being. Degrees and published papers and scientific pedigree and all, he's a human being. And you read about the great scientists of the day, Einstein and all the others, Enrico Fermi, and they're the same. They are honorable men, but, you know, that can lead you into a trap if you do not bear in mind that you're only mortal. The Romans were quite right to have their victorious generals followed around by somebody whispering in their ear, "Thou art mortal." And I've seen scientists almost go off the cliff when they thought that they had a better brand of morality than other people did. Pretty easy to fool yourself, in my opinion.
Well, you're right. That's the story within the novel, folks, of Pericles and Me. It's man battling within himself. Doctor, you are a great storyteller. We'd love to have you back on again with your next book. And please join us again.
Well, thank you. I appreciate your courtesy.
That was Dr. Nick Nicholas. We appreciate him being on our Author's Corner today. And again, thanks to Gwen Sound for their great support of this network. As we always say, may you move your life from ordinary to extraordinary. Have a great week.
Imagine everything you see with no sound. Like a bird without song. A wave with no crash. Or a city with no rumble. It feels empty. Just wrong. A brand without sound leaves you with that same unfulfilled emotion. And brands with the wrong sound leave you dazed and confused. But imagine your brand with the right sound. Brand Sonics helps you discover it. Our proprietary process delivers qualified, consumer-tested, and strategic sonic guidelines true to your brand, and then translates those guidelines into iconic, ownable sonic assets. And with all of your brand guidelines fulfilled, your audience can now not only see, but hear and feel an emotional connection to your brand. And when consumers feel an emotional connection to your brand, purchase intent, repeat purchase, and overall brand loyalty surge. Your consumers need to do more than like you. They need to believe in you. Hearing is believing.